I'm Tom Shalhoub, and this is the Fox News Rundown.
Friday, December 1st, 2017. I'm Lisa Brady. President Trump may be looking at another staff shakeup.
There's probably more chaos in this administration than in any other one that I have ever seen. And I think that a large degree of that is a reflection of the person who's at the top.
But does it really matter?
I'm Chris Foster. It's a hot investment if you have the stomach for it.
Since 2008, the value of a single Bitcoin has crashed more than 80%, five times by my count.
And I'm Greg Jarrett. I've got the final word on the Fox News Rundown.
Both the White House and the State Department are downplaying any suggestion that Secretary of State Rex Tillerson is on the way out.
As long as he is serving at the pleasure of the president, he will continue to do that job.
State Department spokeswoman Heather Nauert, shortly before White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders, said this.
When the president loses confidence in someone, they will no longer serve in the capacity that they're in.
Noting that Tillerson was in the room with the president when he met yesterday with the Crown Prince of Bahrain. But the denials aren't stopping reports that Tillerson will leave, perhaps early next year. Already, more than a dozen top officials have left or been fired. But is that unusual for a new administration?
Oh, no, it's not unusual in the least for an administration to have turnover in its first year.
Fox's chief White House correspondent, John Roberts.
The thing that separates one administration from another is how much turnover they have in the first year. And this particular administration strikes me as sort of the first year of the Clinton administration, when we had a number of departures from Bill Clinton's brand new White House. And we've had a similar number here at this White House. You had the chief of staff leave. You've had the press secretary leave. You've had talk about the Secretary of State about to go. And the best of our understanding is that he'll be leaving probably before the 1st of February. Now, that could always change. But I think that there has been a greater degree of turnover here in this administration than there has been in most of the other ones that I've covered.
Fox's Rich Edson, who covers the State Department, says there's been talk of Tillerson leaving for months.
This has been going on for some time, the speculation, simply because there have been disagreements between the White House and the State Department and the Secretary of State on issues like staffing, on certifying Iran's compliance with the Iran nuclear agreement, even on language with Qatar and North Korea.
In fact, there was some highly publicized tension in October over reports that Tillerson had called the president a moron after a Pentagon meeting in July, and that Vice President Mike Pence had to smooth things over. Tillerson called a news conference.
The vice president has never had to persuade me to remain as Secretary of State because I have never considered leaving this post.
The president's also been accused of publicly undermining Tillerson on foreign policy. When the Secretary of State said the U.S. was trying to work toward diplomatic talks with North Korea, the president said he was wasting his time, tweeting, "Save your energy, Rex."
There have also been complaints from the American Foreign Service Association. They represent career diplomats. That's the union that represents the Foreign Service officers. They have complained that there are massive staffing shortages at the senior ranks of the State Department, and it's making their jobs difficult. There are foreign diplomats who have told us that they have a difficult time contacting the people that they're used to contacting at the State Department. They don't know who to get in touch with, or there are positions that aren't filled here.
A bumpy ride for Tillerson's plan to restructure the department.
Anytime you get a high turnover in staff, it indicates that your administrative machine wasn't working as well as you would have liked it to. It creates a certain amount of chaos when you have people coming in and leaving. But eventually, things settle down. It's taking this White House a little longer to settle down than other White Houses. And I think that's a function of some of the personalities who were here earlier in the administration. You know, you had the clash between Steve Bannon and Jared Kushner. You had Reince Priebus clashing with some other folks as well. I think with the John Kelly coming in, it has settled things down a little bit. But then you have this restive chief executive, the president, who wakes up on a Wednesday morning and decides the first thing he's going to do is retweet a bunch of videos that were posted from an ultra-nationalist anti-immigrant group in the UK and create a diplomatic incident, and B, really kind of hurt your own credibility, because it turns out that the president did not know what the provenance of these videos was and had no idea who this group was that he was retweeting.
it kind of serves as a constant reminder that he's not a politician. He comes from a different world. He's a businessman. But because of that, does he maybe not care so much about these staffing turnovers?
Being from the business world, I think this president is used to a lot of turnover. I mean, there's a tremendous amount of turnover in the business world. But, you know, you've got to have a greater measure of stability when you're trying to run the country, because you want to have people who are in their jobs, who people know, particularly when you're talking about your diplomatic corps. They need to build trust with leaders around the globe. But, you know, the president does most of that himself. His Asia tour was very successful. His tour of the Middle East and Europe to a large degree. I mean, there was a little bit of a hiccup in Belgium when he was at NATO, but the rest of it was pretty much a success. So he tends to rely on his own instincts, though I think it's probably safe to say that those instincts sometimes do not serve him as well as they should.
Of course, we hear pundits and, you know, certain newspapers just screaming that this is all a sign, these turnovers, the constant shakeups, or they make them seem like constant shakeups, just a sign of chaos, just things in complete disarray. I mean, do you get a sense of that? You're there just about every day.
And I've talked to people who are inside the administration and people who used to be in this administration, and there is definitely a chaotic environment. President Trump likes people to work hard. He likes them some degree to be off balance, to not get comfortable in their jobs. But again, you want to have some modicum of stability in your White House because you have such important work to do and you need some consistency. So I'm not necessarily convinced that chaos is the best way to operate an administration. But I will say, though, that other administrations I've covered, the first year has always been fairly chaotic and typically doesn't settle down until sometime in the second year.
The White House seems to be downplaying reports, at least for now, that Rex Tillerson might be on his way out. Does it seem like that's temporary, that they're saying that? They just want to sort of damp that down for now?
The reason that they're downplaying the reports is because it's not imminent. It's likely weeks away. I've been told sort of, you know, the last couple of weeks of January that Tillerson wants to make it past the one-year mark, and then he'll probably leave and could be replaced by either Mike Pompeo, the CIA director, or by Nikki Haley, who's the U.N. ambassador. They're also playing down the idea that he's being forced out. John Kelly issued a statement to the Wall Street Journal in which he said that there's no plan to, quote, remove him. But I do know that there are plans being talked about to, quote, replace him. He's going to leave at some point. Everybody does. He'll probably leave sooner rather than later. But I think it's being overplayed a little bit because we're still probably 6 or 8 weeks away from his departure.
But it seems like, as you say, it will happen.
You talk to people inside the White House and they say to you quietly, you know, is there any doubt that Tillerson's, you know, not particularly happy and is going to leave? No, there's no doubt about it. So I would think he's going to leave sooner rather than later, but I think we're still a little ways away from it.
John Roberts at the White House, thanks for joining us.
Good to talk to you. Thanks.
This is Greg Jarrett with your Fox News commentary coming up.
Bitcoin, money of the future, just a fad. Nope, no actual coins, no pieces of paper, nothing you can hold in your hand. This is all digital, the most popular of what are called cryptocurrencies.
It is now one Bitcoin this week is worth more than 7 times 1 ounce of gold.
Fox Business Network's Deirdre Bolton.
It is peer-to-peer currency exchange. So you and I, you're going to sell me something, I'm going to pay you via my computer. You're going to accept it that way. No government and no banks, so no middlemen.
Okay, so it's like bartering, kind of?
Well, it's just you and I agree on a price of a good or a service, and we exchange it directly. So where it's really taking on a bigger role is in countries not like the U.S., where currencies fluctuate all the time. It's also really gotten a big start, which is why a lot of mainstream America has eschewed it for a long time, is because criminals love it. So it's off the grid. So when it was created in 2008, quite frankly, the people using it were criminals. They were using it to pay off, let's
guns
say you
drugs.
Have guns, drugs, people, unfortunately, human trafficking, and a lot of hackers. Let's say if I hack into Sony, as somebody did, I will demand, chances are pretty high, I will demand payment in Bitcoin because it's almost impossible to track. So for the CIA, for the FBI, it's really difficult to track.
I've heard of Bitcoin mining. First of all, how does that work? And second of all, if it's not in a bank, where does your Bitcoin live, and what's to stop anybody from stealing it or wiping it out?
So absolutely nothing. The people who use Bitcoin for the most part are extraordinarily tech savvy. There are 21 or 22 million. There is a limited number of Bitcoin. They are released, as far as I can tell, fairly arbitrarily. And essentially, it lives in your hard drive, in your memory. So in theory, somebody could steal your computer, mm-hmm. figure out your passwords, and then have access to your Bitcoin.
So each fraction of a Bitcoin or Bitcoin is a code, I suppose.
Like exactly.
It's a piece of computer code.
That's why it's called a virtual currency.
You said 2008. Who invented this? How did it take off? How did this specific digital currency take off?
So no one really knows who the creator is. I'm assuming it's a he, but it could be a she, uses a pseudonym, Satoshi Nakamoto. And it was created in 2008. You'll remember we had a global credit crisis, and a lot of people, including in the United States, lost faith in the financial system. But the creator's vision was this online currency that can be exchanged, again, between peers, but without governments, without banks standing in the middle. I think this is the ultimate potential financial disruption, right? If money becomes peer-to-peer, mm-hmm. that's a huge shift. So not surprisingly,
so
somewhat
no bank,
cynically.
No banks, no governments.
That's right.
Well, governments, stable governments, try to contain inflation and the value of their currency. But this has no checks on it, right?
It has no checks. None whatsoever. And to your point, so a lot of the reason that the U.S. dollar holds its value across the world is because even if a lot of other countries complain about the U.S., the U.S. dollar is still backed by the full faith and credit in the U.S. government. If you want to call us the cleanest dirty shirt in the closet, there we are. But the U.S. dollar holds its value. But if you and I lived in Venezuela, we're used to our money being completely bonkers anyway. So it actually, if I were Venezuelan, it probably makes a lot more sense for me to just do business directly with you, shopkeeper. At least I know you, mm-hmm. and at least you have just as much of a chance of not messing up the transaction as the Venezuelan government.
So it makes more sense, maybe not for
in
Americans.
In a developing
right,
country.
But for Americans, not right now. We don't really need it, but maybe some people.
I think
would
as
want
an
to.
Investment, it's an interesting concept. And I think we are living in a period of disruption, right? Technology is changing absolutely everything. And why shouldn't money be part of that?
One of the most successful investors of all time, Warren Buffett, the Oracle of Omaha, says Bitcoin's a mirage. Chase Bank CEO Jamie Dimon calls it a fraud. Regulations about Bitcoin, meantime, where they exist, vary. Perry Woodens, a cryptocurrency expert and CEO of Node 40, dealing with digital currency services and accounting.
New York is a real good example. They have a very stringent Bit license that anybody who is holding the assets, the cryptocurrency assets of another individual, they have to apply for that Bit license. And then there are states that really don't have any regulations at all that revolve around cryptocurrency, so then it just bubbles up to the federal regulations.
The price of a single Bitcoin got up over $11,000 on November 29th, but here's that volatility. It dropped more than $1,000 in value in the span of about 10 minutes and more than 20% in 24 hours.
It's hard to know what drives these large spikes, but in the early days, it was really easy to manipulate the markets because the market cap of any one of these digital currencies was relatively low. So if you poured a lot of money into it, it was going to affect the total value.
Okay.
Now that the market caps have increased significantly, it seems like you've got institutional investors who are driving these big valuation changes.
Got it. Okay, yeah, because the Bitcoin is now worth so much that no one person can just go in there with a little bit of money and swing.
Yeah, that's right. An individual who's maybe spending a couple $100,000, they're really not going to have any effect on the market. They used to. They don't anymore.
Compare the safety to the stock market in terms of just your investment here. I know, obviously, you could lose money or gain money on Bitcoin, but is there any advantage or disadvantage to getting into this?
Wow, the safety of trading in cryptocurrencies is really interesting. On the one hand, if you are trading and you hold the cryptocurrency, that's really safe because nobody can take it from you. But if you're trading on, say, an unregulated exchange, and you are giving your cryptocurrency to this exchange so that you can do these trades between the alternative currencies or, say, U.S. dollars or mm-hmm. other fiat currencies. That could be risky because you don't know if they're just going to fold up shop and you lose all of your assets. And we've seen this happen a few times already.
So who's investing in this? Now, you said it was obviously big institutional investors. This isn't like a hip millennial cryptocurrency anymore. This isn't just like an experiment from kids that want to get away from big banks or big government. The buy-in's too big now, right?
Yeah, initially the investors that we saw, so I've been doing this and running a business in the industry now since early 2015. So initially we saw very tech-savvy individuals who were attracted to the technology behind Bitcoin. And we also saw some kind of on-the-fringe type investors. Now I'm getting approached by friends and family who want to get into this because they're hearing it in the media and they want to know how it works. So it's, you know, people talk about going to the dentist or getting a cab ride, and your dentist and or cabbie are starting to talk about Bitcoin. So that's where we're at now.
Perry Wooden, CEO of Node 40. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Download the One with Greg Gutfeld.
I have a feeling tonight I'll probably be eating mortadella on crackers while drinking a Pinot Noir in the backyard.
Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcast.com.
And now, some good news with Tanya J. Powers.
3,500 miles. That's how far the Christmas tree that will stand at the U.S. Capitol has traveled to be there. Larry Spiekermeyer is the owner and operator of the Whitewood Trucking Company and was the guy responsible for driving it all those miles. That's a lot of pavement. He says he's traveled 1.5 miles over the span of his career, but this is the trip he's proudest of.
The tree come from our country, the Kootenai National Forest, and northern Montana, and every stop that we made along the whole journey, it was nothing but happy faces because this is the tree for the people. It's the people's tree.
And that journey was a 2-week journey with more than 20 stops through states including Missouri, Kentucky, West Virginia, and Virginia.
We started on the 12th of November and we arrived in D.C. on the 26th of November. So we had a few days on the road and visiting all the different stops across America.
Spiekermeyer even gave people a unique way to get involved with the tree trip.
We had banners on the side of the trailer, and at each stop we made, people could come up and sign their name to the banner on it, and then we got to deliver it to America.
It's an Engelmann spruce and stands more than 70 feet tall. The tree will feature 12,000 ornaments. But Spiekermeyer says he's just happy to be a part of bringing that majestic tree from Big Sky Country to our nation's capital.
It's been there for 77 years, and I think that being able to deliver it to the people of America and Whitewood Transport and myself and Motor Carriers of Montana being all part of it, and Choose Outdoors is our big leader of the whole program, and it's one proud moment for us to do this.
As for his personal feelings about the trip,
I'm going to call this the crown jewel of a driving career, and I guess I'm blessed and lucky to have such an opportunity.
The lighting ceremony is set for Wednesday on the Capitol's West Front Lawn. Tanya J. Powers, Fox News.
Download and subscribe to original podcast from Fox News Radio.
It's time to get caught up on what's happened and what's next. I'm Jared Halpern from Washington.
Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcast.com.
It's time for your Fox News commentary.
Greg Jarrett.
What's
Greg
on your Jarrett. Mind?
A direct conflict between the United States and Russia is a daily threat. 2 months ago, the Pentagon accused Russia of dropping bombs dangerously close to American Special Operations Forces in eastern Syria. The U.S. issued a stern warning. In response, Russia threatened to retaliate if its troops came under fire by the U.S. The two nations use a de-confliction hotline every day to share information about their operations in Syria as military officers seek to avoid a mistake or miscalculation that could ignite a full-scale war between them. Such a conflict is something neither side may want, but its two leaders may be powerless to prevent it. Why? Because of Special Counsel Robert Mueller's continuing investigation. Among those who are deeply concerned is Mikhail Gorbachev. He recently described U.S.-Russian relations as having deteriorated into a, quote, severe crisis.
Writing in a Russian government newspaper, the former Soviet leader offered a dire prediction. Quote, if the system of curbing nuclear arms crumbles, and that is exactly what the collapse of the INF, Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty, can lead to, the consequences will be catastrophic. During the 2016 election, candidate Trump called for warmer relations with a Russian leader. At one campaign rally, he asked, quote, if we could get along with Russia, wouldn't that be a good thing instead of a bad thing? President Trump has reportedly received reassurance from White House lawyer Ty Cobb that the investigation will be finished by the end of the year. This is overly optimistic, notwithstanding a dearth of evidence that Trump ever conspired with Russia. The Senate Intelligence Committee spent 10 months investigating alleged collusion and came up with no evidence whatsoever. Senior Obama administration officials who were privy to the investigations by the FBI, CIA, and NSA are on record as saying they, too, saw no such evidence when they were in office. Unless the special counsel accelerates the conclusion of his investigation or otherwise reveals that there's no evidence of campaign collusion with Russia, relations between the two great nuclear powers could degrade to such a degree that armed conflict may become a frightening inevitability. To put it plainly, Mueller's investigation may be jeopardizing American lives. It is imperative that the probe be brought to a speedy conclusion. I'm Greg Jarrett.
You have been listening to the Fox News Rundown. Stay up to date by subscribing to Fox News Radio's hourly newscast at foxnewspodcasts.com. And for up-to-the-minute news, visit foxnews.com.